62 C79. I guess you could say that I have a Messiah complex, and because of this, am led ineluctably to voluntary crucifixion. To what? Achieve what? Protest the sins of the world. As I say, supra, not to be saved. I am saved, but to save, and to perfect myself, vide supra. The drive toward the spiritual so strong in me now, that I would give up my life in pursuit of it. For I have experienced the spiritual domain and know its joys. This is not anhedonia or masochism. The joys of the spiritual domain, to draw near to Krishna, are beyond all that this world is or has. I realized tonight, the ecosphere is my body. The indivisible unity is my total psychosomatic mind-body being. Animals and all less than human life are my body. And the humans poisoning the ecosphere, this is my mind. Mind, human species, poisoning my body by not recognizing that it must live in harmony with it, that they are parts of one indivisible whole. If the ecosphere dies, means if my body dies, then we humans die, and my mind dies. Note: the mind-body split here allows the formulation of two seemingly distinct entities, mind on the one hand, body on the other, to be worked into an analogy of humans as mind, ecosphere as body. Thus, the poisoning of the ecosphere becomes the mind poisoning the body, without which it too will perish. Dick realizes, on the contrary, that mind and body are an indivisible whole. It therefore follows that the poisoning of the ecosphere means that it is his body being wounded by the activity of other humans, a conclusion consistent with his view of himself as an avatar or surrogate of Christ. The connections here are implicit rather than explicit, but they help to explain why he sees the investiture by Christ as the crucial element in seeing the ecosystem as sacred. NKH. End note. 62 C, 82-83. But underneath the content of my ideas is the value to me of ideas themselves, of the search, an Orphic idea, and the enjoyment of ideas with emphasis on the abstract. The enjoyment of using the abstracting faculty itself, which is when I wrote Eureka. But it is not the intellect that characterizes Tagore. He is far beyond that. Nor is it love nor beauty, although both are there. It is sweetness, an ineffable sweetness related to love, related to beauty, but perhaps more to perfume, music, and colors, as I say in my letter. This is a spirituality that cannot otherwise be categorized, and it is this that tells me that his spirituality is absolute, for it transcends love and beauty, the two ultimate ontological categories of God. This is not God, this is a man, a given individual man. This is not a deity, although he is also, but secondarily, deity. This is the perfection of a man such as we are. This is not the holy other toward which one moves in delight and rapture. This is he, as man, who moves toward the holy other. This is what we as humans can become at best, the transfiguration of the natural to its ultimate without ceasing to be natural, a created thing, not creator. 62 C85. Who and what is Tagore? He is Tagore, a particular, not a god. But I know now he is either Buddha, the Buddha, or a Buddha, awakened or enlightened one. And this is very seriously considered in Vallis as one of the possibilities, e.g., the Buddha is in the park. This is not mysticism or metaphysics or theology or philosophy. Those have come to me, and I enjoyed them, but they pass away, and Tagore remains. and his concern is for life, the ecosphere, not a concern for speculations and flights of fancy. Compassion, the way of Buddha, the noblest way of all. Rejoice. Everything so far has been a head trip, a system of thought, ideas, abstractions, speculations, beliefs. But Tagore is a man, a real and actual man. Even, which I doubt, if he is me, why, he is still a man. For I am a man. 62, C86. Tremendous Breakthrough Insight, 5:15 a.m. The whole Christian magic of 274 on worked because I believed in it. But it worked, not because Christianity is true, in contrast to other systems, religions, which are false, but because Shankara and the Buddhists are right. It is a conjurer's trick. It is magic. And what this points to, the fact that my total belief on that day in 274 when I saw the Christian fish sign caused everything that followed to occur, is illusion. As I say, magic, conjurer's tricks, viz., Christianity to magic to conjurer's tricks to illusion. And what does illusion point to? The truth of Buddhism and Shankara. Pan-Indian thought about the illusory nature of reality, i.e. Maya, not as a veil, but as a, so to speak, plastic mist that obliges. 62, C87. In the face of this, spiritual perfection depends on enlightenment, that there is a grand illusion, inner and outer. And finally, the kind of compassion for all the living creatures caught in the weary wheel of illusions, karma, and rebirth, etc. E.g., the upsilon, resembling a Y, turning into a palm tree, doesn't verify Christianity. It verifies the conjurer's trick, and this is pan-Indian thought. So from 274 to 275, I was in the grip of Maya. But because reality obligingly altered to accommodate my belief, especially my seeing Rome AD 70 and Syria, I had, without realizing it, verified not Christianity, but Maya as a doctrine. I was totally under the spell of illusion, but paradoxically, this very illusion, I mean the transformations in it, held the clue to the real solution. I have not been radical enough. I have thought in terms of either something, reality, versus nothing, illusion. But Maya is not just hallucination. Something is there, as Shankara pointed out. But it is able to assume any guise it wishes. Shankara's example, the magician can cause you to take a rope to be a snake. But there is a rope there. Something is there, but not a snake. But also not nothing. Maya is halfway between hallucination, nothing, and reality, something that is what it seems to be. And this is why it resembles Ubik. 62, C99. I don't know what's the matter with me. The no nukes topic is the topic of protest, and the new counterculture now, as the Vietnam War was in the 60s and 70s. The Tagore dream places me squarely in the middle of the new, current, bipolarized battle, right where I ought to be. And this is what the Silkwood pamphlet must have made me realize, for it tied the nuclear issue in with all that I had to deal with and combat in the 60s, 70s. All of a sudden, it all came together as a single whole. Note: Karen Silkwood was a health and labor activist who died under mysterious circumstances in November 1974. End note. Now the authorities are harassing and trying to silence the foes of nuclear power and weapons and waste disposal. Perhaps my unconscious knew this. Yet, for my coming to see this being part of the revelation of the Savior himself, not just a dream about radioactive waste being dumped in the ocean, but about Tagore, this unites my spiritual vision, i.e. Vallas, and my political vision into one. 62C-161. Where Gnosticism is indispensable is twofold. 1. Exact analysis of fallen man's condition. And 2. It is 180 degrees reversed by what is called gnosis, a cognitive event. But their overall system is unsound. Nonetheless, Gnosticism contains essential pieces of the puzzle. They have an exact understanding of the malady, and also the correct idea that the remedy somehow involves cognition and knowledge. And this knowledge comes as a gift from a savior or messenger, i.e. Christ. Thus, they fully appreciate what salvation refers to, in contrast to which Orthodox Christianity is virtually a cargo cult, making futile motions that ape, without efficacy, the real thing. 62C-168. I have supra done something never before done. Rather than drawing on Gnosticism, I have figured out the real teaching of the Gnostics. At some primordial time, there was indeed a crisis in the heights. But this isn't what interests the Gnostics. Gnosticism is practical. The Gnostics have studied the effects of this crisis and figured out that the intactness of each person in the world is either damaged or abolished, destroyed. Each of us has suffered a primordial inner schism, with the result that any given human self is only part of a once intact greater self. Each of us is alienated from the world, man contra world, because each of us is alienated from himself, not just warring or in conflict. No, the parts of the self have become separated from each other, and because of that, experience of world is partial, occluded, impaired, deformed. A partial self experiences a partial world, with the result that world is alien, irreal, hostile, strange, arousing perplexity and dread. Man does not understand world because he does not understand himself. Thus, Gnosticism derives its epistemology and cosmogony and cosmology from an ontology of psychology. If the missing piece of self is rejoined, if the severed parts come back together, experience of world, Dasein, being in the world, will take care of itself. The rupture between self and world will heal on its own because now world will be experienced radically differently, 180 degrees differently. Gnosticism has hidden its ontological psychology within a weird and grotesque mythology that successfully obscures both real purpose and real means to that purpose, to bring the two parts of the self back together, the ingathering of the light by the messenger who is the Savior saved. Clear evidence that this divine champion is the person himself rescuing himself. 62C-170. The absolutely basic key to Gnosticism is the encounter with the familiar in the midst of the alien landscape. The partial self recognizes something that it has seen before and yet cannot have seen before because, by definition, this is a fremd, unfamiliar landscape, not the self own. With this recognition comes unavoidable returned, restored memory, which is memory of what it, the self, once was. What it is remembering is its true nature. The relation to Orphism is obvious. But it is missing half of itself. It now knows itself to be a partial fragment of a once intact self that is now somehow scattered. Thus, although anamnesis is not primary, it is predicated on recognizing something familiar in the uncanny world. It is the crucial event, because it is in and through anamnesis that the parts of the self, separated for eons, come back together. This means that in all the pieces comprising the total restored intact self are somehow in the self in some way, as if split or dormant or mutually estranged. This would explain the drop in GABA fluid, the blocked neural circuitry disinhibited and at last firing. This literally occurs as an organic physiological brain function. Involved simultaneously in this process is an additional absolutely crucial ingredient, event realization, that I call the meta-abstraction, and which Plato calls noesis. The partial, incomplete self, on its own, cannot perform this cognitive operation because it requires two vantage points by the participant, what I call dytheon, analogous to spatial parallaxes. That which is recognized as familiar must be, by definition, familiar to the estranged, severed part of the total self, since by definition, it has never been seen before by the conscious self, which is only a partial self, that is, for the sense of recognition to occur. The conscious self cannot avoid being aware of its own banished part, for it is precisely that banished part that knows what is seen, recognizes it. There is here a hint of the primordial, suggesting that the original schism did occur in the prenatal past, as Plato taught. But the situation is more complex, because at the level at which the total self operates, the concept past must be redefined. Here, Platonist epistemology enters with its forms doctrine. Unless the universalia ante rem are envisioned. Note, Latin. Universal exemplars in the divine mind, analogous to Plato's forms. End note. What is happening cannot be fathomed. The two parts of the self are not in the same spatio-temporal world. Their relationship to each other comes through, occurs because of a transtemporal constant form, that because it is transtemporal and spatial exists simultaneously in both realms, the realms sharing at least one constant, the one seen and recognized as familiar. It is as if both realms, at two times and two places, are operating off of a common matrix, and this indeed is how Plato depicts the forms. They are not in time and space, and somehow instantiate themselves at this time and this place, yet without losing their unity and intactness. Much of this is palpably Platonistic and Neoplatonistic. But what is truly Gnostic is the idea that the self is fragmented, broken, so that part of it is at one time and place, and the other part at another time and place. Thus, Gnosticism adds a radical ontological psychological analysis lacking in Platonism and Neoplatonism, and logically following from this premise, a soteriology based on a successful rejoining of the fragmented parts of the self. Plato and Plotinus know nothing of this. From the Gnostic viewpoint, each fragment of the broken apart self is not experiencing world at all, in the strict sense, and only will do so when rejoined. Meanwhile, the situation of the fragments is one of alienation, primarily from self, and following from this self-alienation, alienation from world, or worlds, since both halves of the total self are independently tracking, experiencing different partial realities connected only by the Platonic forms, which by their nature are in all worlds at all times and places, or anyhow capable of being so. The ingathering of the self, then, is due accidentally to the perceived form, one form seen twice, that is, in two different spatio-temporal worlds, but deliberately to the salvador salvandus, which is the total intact self operating on its own severed parts to rejoin them, external in a real sense, internal in a real sense, since each severed part is external to the other part, and yet each internally drives toward reintegration. Thus, each part both internally seeks wholeness and is simultaneously aided externally in this quest by the other part. Only when the parts have come together successfully does the total motivation seem internal. But now rejoined, the two parts become a unitary totality and experience a radically different world than either part previously experienced. Space, time, causation, and multiplicity are gone. What exists now is world as unfallen pleroma, because upon the self being reunified, world ceases to be the alien, irreal pseudo-world the parts knew, were thrown into. Restoration to and of self and pleroma then occurs here and now, as Plotinus speaks of. This unified world defies normal ordering categories and experiences the Dithion entity that experiences it. It is familiar, intelligible, and permanent, and most of all, permeated by the divine, whose realm it is. It is a kind of afterlife world. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and radically different than them. The gulf between earth and heaven is abolished, which explains why the Orphics and Gnostics assumed a literal spatial fall. There is an absolute impression of vertical ascent. But what is most striking is that the transmundane deity now reveals its presence in reality precisely as it failed to do so before. Hence, the Gnostic conviction that it is transmundane. This is so remarkable as to defy description. 62C, 181. Gnosticism is virtually a sign-value reversal religion. That is, it assumes the ostensible reality to be a fraud concealing the true story, which is 180 degrees opposite. Hence the need for the revelation of the Gnosis. Everything must be read backward. We are secretly in a giant prison, secretly in thrall. There is a deliberate occlusion practiced on us by hostile warders. The truth is not just hidden, it is deliberately hidden to keep us in ignorance. Were we to know the truth, all would be turned around, all that we see. There is then, in Gnosticism, a built-in revolutionary subversive basis fighting the ruling powers of this world. To reveal is to reverse. To reverse is to reveal. They are one and the same. Note: this notion of reversing signs and reading backward comes remarkably close to the position of Ludwig Feuerbach, 1804 to 1872, a German philosopher who helped found the modern study of religion by pioneering its central theory of projection, that is, the notion that all statements about the deity or the transcendent are in fact statements about human nature and its needs, wishes, and fears. In his The Essence of Christianity, 1841, Feuerbach performs reversals and backward readings very similar to those Dick calls on here. Reading, for example, the biblical notions that God created man in his own image as man created God in his own image, or God is love as love is God, and so on. Whereas the later Feuerbach was certainly an atheist and a materialist, it is not so clear that the early Feuerbach was. Indeed, I have argued elsewhere that Feuerbach can be read as a modern Gnostic thinker who sought to reverse and reduce orthodox claims back to their original base in human nature, which he, paradoxically, considered to be infinite and divine. So the divine projection is reduced to its projector, who is secretly divine. JJK. End note.